Kaplan, and welcome to the Invisible Garment Podcast, where we talk about spiritual principles, knitting, and the politics of ethical behavior. Episode 5, Beauty. Today we'll talk about beauty and the Hubble telescope. We'll talk about knitting a coat that fits a buffalo. We'll talk about speaking the beauty way. We'll talk about beauty and body mutilation. And in our surprise ending, we'll hear Dreaming Blue sing beauty. The spiritual principle of beauty is an interesting one because beauty is so confused in our culture, the word beauty. Too often it means looking like a magazine model, when that is really, and everyone knows that is really, not the definition of beauty at all. I'm hoping that the one place that we can both agree that beauty resides in the pictures that have been sent back to us from the Hubble telescope. Those pictures are so magnificent, because what they do is embody the fact that beauty is light organizing itself in such a specific way and then traveling through the cosmos for sometimes millions of years just to allow itself to be seen by me or you. In The Invisible Garment, I quote Matthew Fox as saying that beauty longs to be conspicuous. Beauty longs to be conspicuous. That's an interesting way to think about beauty. Beauty is something that is so divine that all it really needs is to be seen, to be appreciated. I also quote Brian Swim as saying that the universe was magnificent before humans saw it, but it's the human that provides the space through which the universe feels its own beauty. In other words, light and the various ways that light configures itself is beauty. Beauty is about organization. It's about how atoms organize themselves so that they can be seen and appreciated and adored and admired. Unlike the magazine model definition of beauty, the spiritual definition involves appreciating the light, recognizing the structure, acknowledging the organization of a form, being witness to the conspicuousness of everything that is around you. Now, you know, we've spoken that all of these principles have an internal and an external focus. And we spoke about memory as having focus in the spirit of the energy of the stone. Well, beauty has its focus in the stone itself. You remember we talked about memory having its focus in the way that stones can speak to us. But beauty has its focus in the form, in the actual physical form. And the reason that beauty resonates so deeply with us, or the form and the form of the stone resonates so deeply with us, is that in a sense we are also stones. Our bodies are made of the same stardust, the same minerals that traveled here from the great spewing star millions and millions of years ago. So we're first cousins to the stones. We actually resonate with those beautiful stones. And that's why we love wearing them. That's why we love building homes out of them so that we can live within them. That's why we love using them as tools, because we're in partnership with the stones. There's something about the mathematics of a stone, the way the atoms organize themselves, that create a symmetry or an asymmetry that is aesthetically beautiful. So by just looking at the stones, whether they be gems or whether they be mountains that you're climbing or sides of rocks that you're scaling, you know, like you do. I do that every afternoon myself. But I'm kidding. But as we look at stones, as we look at how they're organized, how they're stratified, how they're sculpted, the principle of beauty is speaking to us. Now, I also want to talk about symmetry and asymmetry in beauty, and I'm going to tell you this quick story. Several years ago, I was about to do something to the front of my house. I was about to change the front door of my house. But I wanted to make sure I wasn't messing with the energy of that house because I thought it had just really pretty divine energy. And so I found out about this Chinese feng shui master, and I talked him into coming over to my house, even though he said he didn't do houses anymore. But anyway, I talked him into coming over, and he came over and he was very grumpy, and he told me he wouldn't need me for a couple of hours, which kind of put me off. So I went and hid in one of the rooms of my house for a couple of hours, and finally he came in and he said, oh, and by the way, I want to tell you that he was Chinese and English was not his first language and not his best language, I'm hoping. Anyway, he came into the room and he said he was ready to talk to me. And he said, you have a beautiful butt. And I said, I beg your pardon. Like, I did not know what to do with that. And he said, come, I will show you. And he took me into the backyard and he showed me how the back of my house was perfectly symmetrical. And he said, that constitutes a beautiful butt. And the back of the house is where evil comes in, but evil doesn't like beauty. And so you've protected yourself. You are divinely protected. Well, I thought that was very interesting because when I first bought that house, it didn't have a beautiful butt. It was not symmetrical in the back. But I had added on a second story. I had first added on a couple of rooms downstairs, and then later in the process, I had added on a second story, and I had created a perfectly symmetrical backside of the house. So I thought that was really an interesting statement, and I've been thinking about it ever since. Beauty rejects evil, or evil does not like beauty. There's something about the symmetry that we call beauty that rejects evil. I think that is really worth considering. Now, did I know I was creating a beautiful butt of a house? Did the architect know that? I doubt it. I think it was something innate in us that wanted to create beauty. Did we know that beauty rejected evil? No, I don't think either of us consciously knew that. But what happened in the process of creating that house, building onto it and reconstructing it, is that beauty, the principle of beauty, was working through us, through me, through the architect. Now that's an interesting piece of this whole teaching. The challenge of living these principles is that we must learn not to control them, but to allow them access to the world through us. Most people ask me, what do I do with these principles? How do I use beauty in my life? But the real question is, how do I get my willful personality out of the way so that beauty can use me? Remember, these principles are universal principles. They are much bigger and much more anchored in spirit than the human personality. The goal is to be a medium, to allow the human personality to be a way through which these universal principles can express themselves. So you need to think of yourself, when you're thinking of these principles, think of yourself as something like a satellite dish, where you are tuning into these principles and allowing them to show up on your TV screen, which is your personality. So in your daily dramas and your daily talk shows and your daily sitcoms and your daily soap operas, come on, I know all of you live in sitcoms and soap operas and talk shows, you're allowing these principles to speak through you. It's important to study the principles and to know a little bit about them, because the more you know about them, the more you can recognize them and observe them, and then the more you come to trust yourself as a medium for them. But to try to force one of them to come through you is all wrong and all backwards, and it won't work. The beautiful butt got created on my house via an unconscious attraction to beauty and an unconscious allowing of beauty to work through me. But the next time I build a house, I will be more conscious and more appreciative of the but. And by the way, the next time I build a house will be in another lifetime. So I'll get back to you then about whether I remember about the beautiful but from lifetime to lifetime. All right, now it's time to talk about knitting. You know, knitters appreciate beauty in a very interesting way. First of all, they appreciate the beauty of knitted garments probably more than non-knitters, just because they can see the process through which that string had to go to become that garment. The idea of taking something totally linear, like a piece of string, and putting it through an incredible process, so that that long, 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 long line of string becomes a garment or an adornment or a useful item or a piece of art. That's the process of beauty. That's how knitting becomes the metaphor for the principle of beauty, because the process of alignment, you know, I was speaking earlier about how atoms organize themselves. Well, then in the realm of form, the process of organizing a piece of string becomes a metaphor for the process of how beauty organizes itself. Now, that process of organizing itself is a mathematical process. And knitting is a lot of things. But first, and before one stitch is cast on, knitting is math. The phrase "do the math" is a popular and common one that we use basically to admonish people to connect the dots, to figure out what's going on, to use their natural instinct toward rational thinking. This phrase, "do the math," is also an interesting part of knitting. Because first of all, absolutely, you have to do the math. But then, and more importantly, you have to let the math do you. So just as I'm saying, you have to understand beauty, but then you have to relax and let beauty operate through you. So it is in knitting. You have to understand the mathematical process of the garment, but then you have to allow the garment to be created through you. The most important part about do the math in knitting has to do with setting your gauge. You have to make sure that the number of stitches per inch that you're supposed to be achieving is indeed the number of stitches per inch that you are achieving. If you don't do that, you will pay a great price. May I tell you a great price story? Several years ago, a friend of mine showed me a coat that she was making. It was a beautiful multicolor coat made out of Koigu yarn, which is a very fine yarn. It's often used for socks, but she was making this coat out of it. She had this incredible pattern, and I loved the pattern. So I borrowed the pattern from her, and I went to the store, and I spent hours and hours and hours choosing my colors. I think there were something like 18 colors or some outrageous thing in this coat. And I chose my colors and I chose my groupings and I bought the yarn. It was hugely expensive. It was a big, you know, it was a long full-length coat. And I think it was, you know, in the $400 range by the time I got out of the yarn store. And I went home and it said to make this coat on size 3 needles. So I got my size 3 needles and I was so excited about the coat and about what I had seen my friend do so far. I just started knitting. I did not do a gauge swatch. So sue me. I did not do a gauge swatch. I started knitting. Well, in addition to that, my friend, there were only 2 sizes. It was a small size small and a size large on this pattern. And my friend is a teeny tiny little girl. So I decided, okay, she's doing small. I'm going to do large. So I started knitting on size 3 needles, large coat. It's tedious. It's a coat that's made out of mitered squares. And so you make this one little square and then you pick up some stitches and you make another square. And so that square is connected to the first square. And it looks like a jigsaw puzzle by the time you finish. It's very tedious. It took me 4 years to make this coat. I'm not kidding. I mean, obviously I did other things in the meantime, because sometimes I would just put it away for a few months at a time because I couldn't bear it. But 4 years of knitting later, I finally finished this coat. And the way it's knitted is also sort of in squares. The pattern is that basically you make four L shapes, and the short part of the L are the arms, and the long part of the L, you know, is the bottom part of the coat. So you make four L shapes, and then you sew them together, and then you have your coat. So 4 years later and $400 later, I have finished this coat. I sew it together, I put it on, and I'm not kidding you, it would have fit on a buffalo. It was huge. It was laughably huge. And I went to a couple of knit stores, and they said, oh, just let's put a pin in the back and make a couple of pleats, and that'll do it. Well, no, that didn't do it. It's, you know, a buffalo coat is a buffalo coat. So I finally figured out that if I had the nerve to cut it, because these mitered squares were all independent squares that were interconnected with each other, I could cut it without the whole dang thing unraveling. And so I cut 6 inches off of both sides of the coat. Are you with me here? I cut one solid foot off of the coat. 6 inches on one side, 6 inches on another side. Sewed it back together. It's still big, but I wear my clothes big, and so it looks okay now. But I must have cut 2 years and about $200 worth of knitting off of the coat. Why? Because I didn't correct the gauge. I didn't check the gauge in the first place. I didn't do the math. I let the math do me without first doing the math. It's a problem. It's dangerous. Now, I'm not saying that living your principles or allowing your principles to live through you without understanding them is dangerous, but I am saying that it's much better if you know what you're doing, if you have a way to comprehend those moments when one of the principles has grabbed you and is living through you. That way, you don't have to correct the errors. The errors will not be made. You will be bearing witness to the universal principles as they live through you. If I had the knowledge of how to do it, I would take a picture of this coat and I would connect it to this podcast. But that is another technological roller coaster that I have not ridden. So when I'm ready for a new learning curve, I'll figure out how to post this coat. Now we're going to talk about the politics of ethical behavior. And remember, in this section, we're using the word politics in its purest definition, meaning that we're referring to sensible and judicious action. Not irrational, cruel, unethical behavior as we see in most of our politicians, but sensible and judicious action. Now, we mentioned earlier that the outer focus of beauty is in the stones. The inner focus of beauty is in the throat. So if beauty is the principle that influences your ethical behavior, then your voice becomes most important in your life. If beauty influences your ethical behavior, what you say is very, very important. Although how you say it is equally important, and the vibration of your voice is equally important. So if beauty is your ethical principle, I encourage you to listen to your voice, to listen to what you have to say. When I was writing this podcast, I started thinking, now, who would be the poster child for beauty? Earlier, I found Ted Kennedy to be the poster child for purity, and I thought, there's got to be someone equal as a poster child for beauty. Whose voice speaks the truth? Well, obviously, Walter Cronkite came to mind because he recently passed away also, and he was called the most trusted man in America because of what he said. So I looked him up, and guess what? Walter Cronkite's moon is in the principle of beauty. And then I thought of Edward R. Murrow, who also had the courage to say the words that finally brought Eugene McCarthy to his knees. So I looked up Edward R. Murrow, and guess what? His son is in The Principle of Beauty. So here we have two truth tellers, and this is exactly what I'm talking about. It's not just what they said, it was also how they said it, and it was also the fact that they took responsibility for what they said. Their honesty and the resonance of their voices is proof that beauty was working through them. If beauty is your ethical guideline, it is your job to name the lies as you see them, to allow your voice to speak the truth. In modern times, speaking the truth often gets labeled as being wildly radical, or left-winged, or left-biased, or liberal. Not that every person on the so-called left speaks the truth, but the trend in advertising, in politics, and in conservative Christianity is to demonize truth-tellers. The politics, the sensible and judicious behavior of beauty, calls for structure, order, alignment, and ostentatious, conspicuous truth-telling. Thank you so much for the feedback this week. And thank you for those of you who alerted me to the weird little technical problem that I had so that I could remix it and get it up right. More feedback, please. I love it. I enjoy it. I appreciate it. I got one great question about beauty from one of you. And the question was, what is the deeper issue about beauty? Different cultures have different aesthetics, different opinions about what constitutes physical beauty. But every culture agrees that a dark, dark sky on a starry, starry night is beauty at its best. I love that question, and I don't really have an answer. Why do some cultures find various forms of body mutilation to be beautiful? I don't know. Why do some cultures prefer women of substance while others proclaim that one can never be too rich or too thin? I don't know. Why do some people love desert landscapes while others long for the trees of Tennessee or the mountains of Colorado? I don't know. But I do think we can all agree that a starry, starry night is a beautiful night, and that those pictures from the Hubble telescope are breathtaking. I don't know the answers to those questions, and I do believe that it's not just cultural training. I believe it has to do with internal mathematics. I believe that how one perceives symmetry varies with the unique configuration of energies that comprises that person's invisible garment. I believe that the statement, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, is not just a catchy phrase. Thanks as always to Kevin Brennan for the music. To learn more about him and his music and the marvelous company that he and his wife Robin have, please go to their website, www.fboo.com. F as in Frank, boo as in boo-boo. I invite you to visit us at www.turtledreamers.com. There's a link to the beauty newsletter in the program notes, or you can select the newsletter archives on the homepage and read more about beauty. In addition, you can go to the Open Dream Space, select the forum list, and go to the 30 Principles forums to read what others are saying about the podcasts and about the specific principles that we're covering. And we certainly want you to contribute there too, so register with us and become a contributor. And now for our closing surprise. Are you beautiful? By what measure do you make that call? I found this two-person band from England called Dreaming Blue on PodSafeAudio.com. Nessa Voss and Ian Eden have a splendid way to sing beauty. Take a listen.
Carrying the weight of nothing, seeking wisdom from God's fools, nighttime silhouettes teaching a mystery. Life has fallen into laughing, layers of what I see.
Until next time, sweet dreams.